Everybody, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Reformed Dissenters. That is us. We're back week two after quite a break. This is the show where Reformed Christians dissent against popular ideas of culture by asserting a biblical worldview. And I realized last week I did not announce our names. I figured by this point, who's a new listener at this point? But they do tend to happen every week, so that was dumb of me. I'm Bruce Johnson, joined, of course, and as always, by my brother, Jacob Johnson.
Hello, everybody.
And today is Everything Day. It is Current Events Wednesday, rolled in with Literature Friday, rolled in with what was Discussion Topic Friday, but turned into Literature Friday and is now Wednesday. It's just everything. So today's episode covers a lot. We're basically talking about current events from a biblical perspective. Stuff happened and it warrants discussion. And then we're reading our book, which is The Book That Made Your World by Vishal Mangalwadi. Did I get that right, Jake?
Mm-hmm.
I did it. And that was from memory. I've been drilling it into my head this last week. I think I finally got it. Oh, okay, I can say names. And it's a good book. We're covering chapter two this week. But we're also discussing some pretty major current events related stuff that happened. Has been happening. This is kind of more of a less like emergency sort of deal and more of just a why from a biblical perspective. So, but before we do all that, we have to do what we always do, and that's talk about our verse of the week. And we're apparently oscillating and just swapping off and on, because this week, Jake is going to take it. So go ahead.
What was that name? Whatever. Nobody cares. Psalm 111:10 is our verse this week. This one is an interesting topic, and I want to take it as a topic. I'm going to read the verse. Don't worry. Don't freak out. I'm going to read the verse. But I do want to take this as more of a topic, sort of bringing a topic episode into this, sort of. So think of this as sort of a topic, but also it's the verse of the week. The verse of this week, again, Psalm 111:10, and it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding has all those who do his commandments. His praise endures forever." And I want to go into some other verses which also say this, but I want to start out talking about the fact that the fear of the Lord, as most of you have probably heard a sermon about the fear of the Lord. I mean, it's a very popular phrase, biblically speaking. It comes up a lot. Like, you would be surprised the amount of times that it comes up throughout the Bible. I mean, I have at least, I don't know, 10 verses here that say it, and I know there's many, many more that also say it. But so you probably most likely have heard a sermon on the fear of the Lord and what that really means. But kind of to break this down a little bit. Ultimately, the fear of the Lord is obeying God. That's what, when you say the fear of the Lord, when someone fears God, what are they saying? They obey God. They follow God. And kind of to prove this point, we have Psalm 111:10, but also Psalm 112:1, which says, "Praise the Lord, how blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments." This one is basically saying, a man who fears the Lord also greatly delights in his commandments. Someone who fears God greatly delights in God's commandments. Makes sense. That's pretty simple. Psalm 128:1 says, "A song of ascents, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways." His is capitalized, so that's God's ways. Someone blessed is everyone who fears the Lord and walks in his ways. That's following God or obeying God. Deuteronomy 14:23 says, "You shall eat in the presence of the Lord at the place where he chooses to establish his name. The tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and the firstborn of the herd and your flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always." That one is very interesting because it kind of brings in a more of a practical aspect here, because it's speaking about this ceremonial law. It's speaking about the firstborn of your herd of flock, the tithe of your grain, the new wine. So this is speaking about this ceremonial law. In keeping that ceremonial law, you learn how to fear God, right? We can apply this to ourselves by us following his law, we are learning how to fear God.
But, right. Well, and I think specifically on that one, if we don't step back and look at Israel's culture and understand what that meant to them, we lose the point, right? Mm-hmm. What that meant for them was, give me your best things. Mm-hmm. Bring the best of your labors. If you make a lot of money that week, bring it to me. Yeah. If you got a lot of clothes this week, if you had a lot, if you managed to make great products this week, bring your best iPhones to me. Bring your best technology to me. Bring your best cars. Bring your best clothes. Bring the best of the best to me. That was what God was saying. This was not just some, oh, just bring your money. You know, no, this was, give me the best.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, you're learning how to appreciate what you have. You're learning how to take the blessings and use them for God's glory. And you're learning by him giving you a gift and you giving it back to him. You are learning what it means to receive and to give properly.
Yeah. Well, to transition over, we're now talking about a culture that does not fear God. And in that culture, many stupid things happen. Like, who chooses our president? and this, we are talking about Trump. Sorry to say, we are talking about Trump. But
lest there be any confusion, we are not talking about demon witch lady. We are
tackling Kamala.
Which, by the way, how seriously are we taking this at this point?
I mean, a lot of people are starting to take it a lot more seriously, like
because of
the propaganda that the left is kind of pushing out onto their news sites and stuff. Yeah. They're basically saying, basically creating a whole new image for Kamala. Like, you think of her a lot differently. If you just read all these articles that they're putting out, news stories that they're putting out, you would think Kamala is a completely different person than what we have seen in the past 4 years under Biden. So, kind of weird, but
they have to. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
What else are they going to do? They put someone in office who is clearly not elected by her people. They have to push out propaganda so that there's not a massive uproar and an uprising. If that were our party, could you imagine? No, you'd have to imagine how we'd react, because we wouldn't. We wouldn't react at all today. But in normal times, can you imagine if a party just said, oh yeah, by the way, this is your candidate now, even though you didn't vote for her. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
She's yours. We've decided. Like mm-hmm. what?
Yeah, exactly.
So they have to prop her up. They have to make her the best thing since sliced bread, or else.
And this is getting off topic, but I love this conversation. But also, did you also hear that she decided on her vice president?
Waltz or whatever his name is?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know too much about him. I do got to do some research on him. Because we were all thinking it was going to be Josh Shapiro.
I was just shocked it was a dude.
Well, no, everybody thought it was going to be Josh Shapiro. Which
really?
Is the governor of Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
Super, super awful bad guy. But, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pennsylvania elected him, so.
And there's a whole like conspiracy theory about why they didn't pick Josh Shapiro, all that weird stuff. And getting off topic, we are talking about today Project 2025. Project 2025 is, I don't want to get too much into it because I will explain what it is, but I want to keep the suspense for now. But to just start out, this is connected with the Heritage Foundation. Pretty much everybody has heard of the Heritage Foundation by now. They are instrumental in conservative in conservative circles as being a trustworthy list of candidates or people to choose for certain things. They create these lists. They do very well on choosing good personnel for campaigns or for, you know, office, you know, whatever it be. But The Heritage Foundation is well known, and people like them in conservative circles. So Project 25 is connected with that. Now, Project 2025 put out this 900-page paper titled Mandate for Leadership. So, in this paper, they list out what needs to be done if Trump wins this next election, what needs to be done because, and this is why this is happening, why did they put out this 900-page paper? Well, they put it out because a lot of people were looking at what Trump did in the last 4 years he was president and were like, wait a second, he said he was going to drain the swamp. The swamp is not literally much more drained than it was before.
What was one of the worst things Trump did? He did a lot of bad things. Mm. But what was one of the things in conservative circles he is well known for now? Not being surrounded by the best. He went in there saying, I'm going to be surrounded by the best people. Yep. It's going to be the greatest people in the world. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And literally, the dude puts Fauci in charge of the country for a year. He gets Birx in there. Finally, after a half a year, gets Atlas eventually, and then doesn't listen to him. The guy who actually could have saved his presidency. He puts Amy Comey Barrett, puts her in office, who has voted more times with the Democrat judges than the Republican ones. Now, sure, she overturned Roe v. Wade, but that's all she's done. I mean, she is...
The Supreme Court now, just to, you know, stop anybody from attacking what Bruce is saying here, the Supreme Court now is siding decently okay. Like, they have had some issues, like, there have been some recent decisions that are bad, and we don't like them, but they have, oddly enough, been siding and doing really well. I personally believe that is because of Judge Thomas, but you can say what you will. But yes, Amy Coney Barrett is not the superstar that we thought she was going to be.
You know? Bill Barr, look at Carrie Lake, look at the Georgia governor. The list goes on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very clear problem of his presidency.
The best people. Right.
Yeah.
Now, Project 2025 was being attacked by the left as being far right, and they're alt-right and, you know, evil and blah, 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 all this stuff. And so it garnered a lot of attention as being a... Oh, this is some Nazi Germany type thing, you know. Oh, no, we don't like Project 2025 because, you know, that's how propaganda and gaslighting works, right? Right? Yeah. So I do want to go into what Project 2025 actually says. But first of all, I do want to mention Trump attacked Project 2025. Yeah, no, he attacked Project 2025.
Vehemently.
Yes, very vehemently.
I don't know who these people are.
For a month-long cycle,
mm-hmm.
attacked Project 2025. I got to find out a better way of saying that without saying Project 2025 every single time. But good luck. He's attacking it, which is very, very odd. Because if you start to look into what it is, you start to realize... Wait a second, why are you attacking this? But because Trump is attacking this, the director of Project 2025 had to step down. That director was Paul Danz. Very great guy, very well known, especially within Heritage Foundation circles. So he was a part, he was the director, and Heritage Foundation really liked him. He was great, you know, not awful person. But he had to step down because of this criticism from Trump. And Project 2025 is dying off as well because of what Trump is saying.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been suspending this the entire time. But what does Project 2025 actually stand for? Let me list you a few things that this is what the left media says about Project 2025. But you would expect from left media for this to be, oh my goodness, far right, you know, evil, awful things, right? They want to show you the worst. This is what they say. They want to eliminate or significantly shrink the education department.
Sign me up.
They want to end diversity, equity, inclusion programs.
Horrible.
And they want additional restrictions on abortion.
Oh my goodness, that's just terrible.
One last thing. They want more requirements or working requirements for food stamps. Does this sound like an evil company?
You know who it sounds like? Hitler. That's his party right there. This is his project. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, people, these are Christian standards. These are things Christians should be standing for. Why is Trump not standing for them?
Limiting baby murder, limiting indoctrination, and limiting socialism. No, Trump, those sound like horrible things. Please, please don't back those things. Don't back them with your power, with your money, with your influence at all. In fact, please shut them down. We wish it didn't exist in the first place.
Trump did agree with the left and literally called this far right.
Mm-hmm. I heard that speech.
There is far this... right people out there, and they're the extremists, and they want me to be extremist. I told them I won't do that. I'm not going to be extremist. They can do that. I don't know who they are. I don't know who's involved, but they're extremists.
How do you know that they're extremists if you don't even know who they are? Whatever. Moving on to literature, Bruce, if yes. you want to move on from current events. Just to let you guys know, that's what's going on. Trump doesn't stand with you. He doesn't.
Yeah.
If you are Christians who believe in these things, Trump hates these things, by the way. He thinks these are far right. You as a Christian, are you far right?
Yep. It's a game. We're in the middle of their game. Now, it's a game with high stakes, apparently. Apparently, in this game, you can get shot at, and you can be taken to court, and you can lose a lot of your money. Mm-hmm. But it's still a game. He's not taking this seriously. He's not reevaluating his beliefs. That's not true. Sorry, I didn't. I unfairly represented him. He has evaluated his beliefs in the wrong direction. Somehow, his talking points have gotten worse, not better. Somehow, he went out on stage in 2016, earlier than that, claiming to be a fairly Christian guy, claiming to be all these different things, had all these great talking points. Whoever was his campaign manager apparently told him a lot of really good things. Now, sure, he'll bring up every once in a while with the whole shooting thing, which he doesn't really talk about anymore, apparently, which is just dumb. Dude, you were shot. We want to hear about it. He brought up maybe once, if it weren't for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here. That was it. Does that call you to change your life at all? Live differently? Think differently? No? Oh, okay. Great. Lip service for no reason.
He came out in 2016 calling himself a baby Christian. Mm-hmm. Now he's calling Christians babies.
If you guys didn't
realize what he said, he basically treated Christians like babies in one of his speeches.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and it's because we let him.
Right.
It's because the church lets him. It's because, well, at least he's going to hold them off our backs just long enough while we can, I don't know, just survive. It's like, are we building a country here? Are we building a culture here? Or are we just sitting around hoping something magical happens? What is this? What do we, as the Republican Party, exist as? I mean, as Steve Dace is fond of saying, it's not a movement. Because if it were a movement, it would actually get things done. It doesn't. It just is, apparently. It's just controlled opposition. And with that, I'm going to go hit my head against a brick wall for a second and then come back to this book. The book is The Book That Made Your World, How the Bible Created the Soul of Western Civilization by Vishal Mangalwadi. We learn a lot about Vishal in this chapter, chapter two. He talks about his life, basically gives an account of what happened to him in India that ended up with him in jail for his beliefs and for what he was doing to help the poor and the needy during hurricanes and other times of need in India. It's a very compelling story. It's a very good story. We are actually not going to be spending this last 10 minutes discussing that, though. So we encourage you to read that for yourself. You can get a copy of this on Amazon or Canon Press. I believe Canon Press sells it. Lots of places you can get this book. But at the beginning, he kind of lays some foundational background into the culture of India. And this is particularly the culture of India around the time of 1976, the 70s, the 80s, a little bit before. But then he actually refers to thousands of years it's been. There's been an absence of effective law and order. He talks about armed bandits called, I'm not even going to try. Okay, maybe I should try dacoits. Let's go with that. D-A-C-O-I-T-S. It's an Indian word, I assume. But apparently, it's a member of, or a dacoit is a member of a class of criminals who engage in organized robbery and murder. And they just would go around looting, kidnapping for ransom, killing, frequently building temples to their patron deities. And this is a theme that comes up constantly throughout this chapter, is India is a quote-unquote religious culture, religious society, right? They've got these deities, they've got these small g gods, they've got these spiritual ideals, very similar to spiritual ideals you see in a lot of Eastern cultures that are very individualistic, that are very much related to fate. And he expounds on this on page 28. He says, for thousands of years, the absence of effective law, order, and justice had exacted a deliberating toll from our people. They had been coerced into thinking that it was unwise to be wealthy. Wealth, at least its display, was an innovation, was an invitation to trouble. Our history was frozen. An absence of savings and investment had ensured that no one invented agricultural or domestic appliances. India stagnated while the West advanced. And Jake, I think this was something you were looking into in this chapter, this concept of wealth, development, or lack thereof in the East. Could you tell us a little bit about what you looked into there, or some of your takeaways?
Yeah, so it's kind of what Bruce was just saying. The Mangalwani spoke about his time in central India, where they did consider wealth to be dangerous. As Bruce mentioned earlier, these gangs and stuff would come through and plunder and steal and loot and whatever, would murder, would kill, you know. So it was dangerous to add wealth. If you had wealth, you had a target on your back. Because, hey, now they want to come and take that wealth. And they could just as easily take your wealth and do what they pleased with it. Wealth was trouble because if you had money, you were targeted. So the people with wealth, how they treated wealth, and most people from the outside would look at this and be like, oh, wow, they're so pietistic. They would just bury their wealth. They would bury it. They would put it in the ground and leave it.
Because, how spiritual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How spiritual. And what this led to, and what Bruce was saying there at the end, this led to their culture being stagnant. They weren't innovating. They weren't creating new. They weren't building. The majority of the people lived in the exact same house that their grandfathers and, you know, great-grandfathers lived in. And normally, as Christians, we would consider that as like, oh, wow, generational, you know, growth and wealth and, you know, they're growing up. And no, because it's assumed that you take that house and you build onto it.
Mm.
Make it bigger.
Yeah.
They didn't. They did the repairs that were absolutely necessary, but they never made it bigger. They never grew onto that. The idea of having a house and building onto it means you can have more children in that house. You can grow a better society because you're bringing
more hands.
Exactly. Yeah, more people into a society. You're adding to a very nice community. If your house looks nice on the outside, people are going to want to live there because they're like, oh, wow, right. This community looks nice.
Well, there's an importance placed on the idea of natural beauty. There's an importance placed on things looking nice. You want to present. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you wouldn't want to walk around seeing ugly looking buildings. So why don't you be part of that? And in the West, this was our thinking for a long time. We're losing it. But this was our thinking. We want our buildings to look beautiful, not for us, but for the people who have to walk past them. We want to dress well and present ourselves well, not for us, but for the people we pass in the grocery store or on the sidewalk. It's for those people. But they didn't have that mentality, that mindset in this Eastern world. Sorry, did you have more that you wanted to say on that topic? So there are a lot of very interesting observations that can be made right here at the beginning of this chapter. There's so much here because the culture, that Eastern world, that Eastern culture was so tumultuous. There are no certainties. There's no no cemented framework. Everything is crazy. There's no law. There's no order. There's chaos everywhere. And because of that, everything seems like it's left up to fate. One day my crops could be fine. The next day they could be destroyed by a hailstorm because we didn't put up the proper protections to protect them. Right? Because, well, we just have to get by. And if we put up those proper protections, we could get looted the next day. And if it doesn't hail, that was stupid. We just wasted all that and it got stolen anyways. You know, like it's just, and so everything's left up to chance, up to fate. And so what's crazy is that they created gods that reflected themselves. Right, their gods that they created, and Vishal talks about this, the gods that they made up for themselves reflect their tumultuous nature and their own tumultuous worldview and the chaos around them. They didn't know how to make sense of it. So he says, quote, they put their faith in fate, not in a living God who planned for them a destiny and enabled them to fulfill it. Their faith bred terror, not adventure. And that's another thing. The Israel, even though here's what's fascinating, Israel didn't do that. Israel went through tumultuous times too. How many times was Jerusalem sacked? How many times were they brought into captivity? How many times in their world were they brought through craziness on all sides? And yet, the true God of the Bible does not reflect that. The true God of the Bible is a rock, is a strong foundation, is a Lion of Judah. Is a God who controls all, has predestined all, who ordained all, does not leave things up to fate, who is a God who teaches us about the laws of sowing and reaping, right? Cause and effect that are built into the world. That is not a natural thing for people, especially in Israel's state, to just make up. Look what India did. Similar predicament. And look what they did. So I just find it fascinating, the difference there. And the stark, it's just obvious that this is not a man-made thing. This worldview, Christian worldview, is not a man-made thing, like India's worldview on spirituality. One additional thing that's kind of interesting, it also ties into this, but all throughout the story you hear, just in case you were wondering, like, well, okay, was it really that bad? Yeah, it was that bad. Kind of is still sort of that bad. Michelle was talking about how other farmers, as a quote from page 29, other farmers were reluctant to buy water pumps because they feared theft. Electricity was not available for domestic use in villages. Even if it had been, no one had heard of electric kitchen appliances, nor had they the money to buy them. And this kind of goes on and on and on throughout the whole chapter. I mean, one of the reasons that care was so necessary was because they were still building roofs out of this clay stuff, this half-baked mud that could not stand up to hail. So when hailstorms happened and when other storms happened, it just destroyed the people's houses. But what's worse than that is that mob bosses were actively being elected into office to rule the nation. Then they would put in laws and rules that would say, no, you're not allowed to go help people. This is why Vishal got put in jail. No, you're not allowed to go help people without our direct authorization to do so. You cannot collect funds. Yeah, exactly. The corruption is bonkers. And I can only assume he's setting this up so that when we get to chapter 3, he contrasted several times throughout this chapter how his faith was a stark difference. Newspapers, local newspapers, were just confounded by the fact that he and his family decided to put money, right? Wealth, which is hard to come by. You should bury it, get rid of it, put wealth into other people, into helping other people's houses, giving them food, giving them a place to rest. This was for, and Vishal would talk about how that was his faith that made him do that, which in India, your faith making you do that, but it's fate. What are you talking about? This doesn't make any sense, whatever, right? So it's a really fascinating story, and I would highly encourage you to check out the rest of that, chapter, just to get his full story there. Anything else, Jake, real quick before we wrap up, you want to add? Or
I think it's interesting also the way that he reacted to certain situations, especially with certain mob bosses and whatever. And you can read certain specific instances, but also the fact of him standing strong and him just standing his ground and him facing things and just being there, being a man, being a leader, standing in the face of danger, not backing down. And it ended up well. I mean, he went to jail, but in the end, things worked out even better than before he went to jail. So just, I did want to point that out as a very thing, and definitely read this story because there were amazing things like that in this.
Oh yeah, all throughout. And with that, thank you all so much in the audience for watching or listening to us today. We obviously really appreciate that. We had quite a lot of downloads over the last several months, and those numbers are still going up. So thank you all for sharing. Thank you for posting these episodes. Our social media accounts are doing fairly well. So keep that going. More likes, more follows. We're on Facebook for now, YouTube for now. But we're also on Rumble. We're also on Gab. We're on a lot of different places. So please follow us on all those different places. And we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Thank you, Jacob, for all your research and work you put into this episode. And everyone else, we'll see you next Wednesday when we're back to discuss current events and literature from a biblical perspective. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful Lord's Day. And remember, everyone, in all that you do, do it as unto the Lord.